Welcome to episode 45 of Gallifrey Public Radio. This week, we walk through the scrapyard to the brickyard, go from the graveyard to the backyard, take a trip from the shipyard to the farmyard. We're talking about the Valyard. But first, your hosts. I'm Jay Whitten.
We need somebody who is more intense.
And with me are Melissa Mazza.
I demand to be referred to as Sagacity from now on.
And Keir Hansen.
The jockstrap of Rassilon is formidable and large.
Spoilers.
We will be discussing news and rumors, as well as episodes that have already aired. But if we get into anything too serious, don't worry. We'll warn you again.
Welcome to episode 45 of Gallifrey Public Radio, where we separate ourselves from our evil thoughts and tendencies, only to have them manifested into living form and put us on trial. Fun times, huh? I am Keir, joining you here in the GPR studios, along with Jay. Good evening, sir.
How's it going?
Fantastic, as always. And Melissa, madam.
Hello.
I should say,
how are you guys tonight?
Of course, mum. Very good, very good. Hopefully none of our listeners have melted over the last week and a half or so, this global pandemic heat wave that's causing everyone to complain incessantly, including us.
Yeah.
So we have new stuff to discuss. We decided a little while ago, as we mentioned in one of the earlier casts, that there were some ancillary characters that had been brought about to mention again in the mind of Stephen Moffat. He has decided, being the classic Who fanboy that he is, that he was going to start dropping references to villains, foes, species, races, and locations that we haven't heard from in quite some time. Revival of the Ice Warriors, case in point. Bringing the Cybermen around again with a considerably creepy upgrade. And with the massive mind-bender of a reveal at the end of our series finale, Name of the Doctor, we get the ubiquitous John Hurt mystery that we can't seem to get enough about or theorize.
What does it mean?
We don't know. But we've got hints at things. We've got mention in that particular episode. There was mention of a name that, as I think we discussed when we were talking about the first of our two discussions on the finale episode. The moment the name was mentioned, I know I jumped off the couch.
Oh, absolutely!
I'm sure I wasn't alone. We were talking about the other names that the Doctor has gone by. The Destroyer, the Enemy, the
Oncoming Storm, the Beast,
the Valyard. And that was one where my Whovian ears pricked up because, we haven't heard much from the Valyard. Well, we haven't seen the Valyard in the TV series in a long, long, long time. And even in some of the extended material, the comics and novels, we haven't heard from him in about, I want to say about 10 years. So, Stimo's digging deep on one. And it's not something you casually throw out there because it's a character that...
that has been actively avoided for so long.
Yeah. And we dug up a little bit of research to find that was actually intentional, some of the avoidance. Kind of nasty too. to give a bit of a backdrop, Jay, you want to give us like a 30-second synopsis of how we first come to know this figure in black?
Well, so basically, the Doctor in the Trial of the Time Lord serial is sucked out of time and brought to Gallifrey to stand trial for his quote unquote meddling. The prosecutor, who happens to be the Valyard, that's our first introduction to him, accuses the Doctor of being, of meddling and causing all kinds of countless deaths and things like that, and is calling for his execution.
Right. His execution and the forfeiture of all of his remaining regenerations.
Right.
This is the time it's happening with Sixth, so we're assuming that he's still got a few under his belt. Yeah. We even get it turns out that it's kind of a made up term. We had when I was asking around to see if anybody had any questions on this or had any comments to submit about the Valier, because really it's only really classic Whovians who know anything about them. Mm-hmm. Our friend Soleil, who is waiting to get primer to step into classic Who. I know Soleil. I've been listening. I swear I'll put it together for you. I promise. His only comment was, "What the frack is a Valier?" So now they were describing in the first of the four episodes that comprises the Trial of a Time Lord that it was meant to be, a prosecutorial term, meaning a doctor of law or a professor of law. But we come to find out that was just they just made up the term, which just is fine. I mean, it sounds legit enough.
Yeah.
But Sixth Doctor has a lot of fun with it, calling him the Brickyard and the Boneyard and the Scrapyard and the all the other things. But we just accept him for the longest time through that serial as just the prosecutor. Yeah,
he's just a scumbag lawyer. No big deal.
Yep.
Dressed well, in black. Isn't Valier the official name of the prosecutor on Gallifrey? Don't they say that at one point?
Well, yeah, but it's the term that they've given to that position. But it's as far as what it stands for, whether it's a legitimate legal term or anything, no, it was completely invented for the show. We realize, though, through all of the evidence that's being presented through the Matrix, by the way, good to know that this is one of the good opportunities for those of you who are curious about this whole connection with this Matrix term that we had discussed at one point when we were talking about Who Tech. This was the Matrix as we know it is the recollection, thought, and observation information repository for all the Time Lords. So it's more than just an informational database. It's actually done through observation and can, as we come to find out through the course of that episode, can be done through the eyes of anybody present. So even if the Doctor isn't there, or if the Time Lord, I should say, in question is not in that particular space and time, if the individual who is present is connected in any way to that Time Lord, then their evidence is submitted as well.
Right. Yes, so for anyone who hasn't seen the episode, this is what they're using as evidence in the courtroom, as if there were surveillance cameras, CCTVs. Like, this is the Matrix. Like, it's all recorded on there.
Right. It feels at times like you're watching a clip show watching a scene. All of a sudden they cut back to the court. That's not how it happened. Well, okay. Well, then fill us in here. But long story short, we come to find out towards the end of that serial that the Valier has been manipulating things and circumstances and his arguments in order to see the Doctor's death occur. He's not just doing it by following the letter of the law. He has specific intent. Dun, dun, dun.
Yeah, so as we go throughout, we've got a couple stories that happen, a lot of, different accusing, and just the whole Time Lord trial or, court system and everything, it just seems so ridiculous. I mean, you can just throw in new charges just because it, the fancy suits you. It's like, oh, hey, let's go ahead and throw in genocide here, even though this has nothing to do with it. It's like, mm-hmm. The courtroom drama of it, while the dialogue and some of the acting and stuff was pretty good, the actual mechanics behind it seem a little bit wonky. But
yeah, very, very loose. not to mention the fact that Sixth spends almost the entire time either cracking jokes or giving objections.
Or calling him the scrapyard.
Exactly.
The farmyard.
So a far more interesting member of the whole court system, the Inquisitor, I felt, starts to see through this after a while that there are some ulterior motives going on. And we come to find out, well, there's somebody else involved, and the Master, our good buddy, makes himself known. He's being used for some evidential information, and we come to find out that the Valier is going after the Doctor for his own personal gains.
And that's when we find out that the actual identity of the Valyard is a version of the Doctor.
Right.
And I mean, this was a huge, like, mind-blowing event, because you've sat here and you've watched like 12 episodes of the show, and you're like, okay, this Valyard guy is scum, whatever, you know, blah blah blah. And then the Master comes out and says, oh yeah, no, he's an amalgamation of all your dark side stuff between your 12th and final regeneration. And you're just like, what?
Mm-hmm. Now, and this opens up all kinds of opportunities, because think about what the Master himself went through in terms of some of his attempts to either reset or beat the system as far as his regenerations went as a Time Lord himself, who went rogue or twisted or just power hungry or whatever happens when you start facing your mortality. So this could have been something that, could have happened to a number of Time Lords.
Yeah,
it's interesting to know that since Time Lords have the opportunity to be able to manifest or be able to transfer a lot of their experiences and emotions back and forth to different animate and inanimate objects like the Matrix, that it's not out of the realm of possibility to manifest a sentient being. You know, we don't know all of the intricacies of the Time Lord structure, to be able to manifest this being that is the corporeal form of all of the evil intent. Just to kind of tap into some of the extended material, there's a couple of the Who novels that were published that focused around anywhere from the 6th, 7th, and 8th Doctors, one of which you can grab. It's pretty freely available. I found it relatively cheap on Amazon for about $8 for a paperback. I can grab a copy of The Eight Doctors, which has our beloved eighth, miss you, Paul McGann, miss you, to be able to jump back and save some aberrations in the timeline to his own previous regenerations, and one of which is his return to the trial. He has to sort of something is different about the way the trial played out, and the Doctor was actually in an execution line and about to be essentially shot to death by the council's guards or bailiffs or what have you at the Valyard's instruction, when Eighth Doctor shows up in his TARDIS and basically pulls him inside and they run from the scene. We get another sort of an explanation. They sort of go through, you know, we get to see the trial from another perspective, sort of see it from the, you know, the hovering over the sort of seeing your body from this out of body experience, where we get a little bit more of an explanation of the fact that that the Valyard is actually this manifestation of all the Doctor's faults or shortcomings, or as they describe it, his darker side. But they focus specifically, they repeat the fact that it's happening somewhere between his 12th and 13th. And right, that's what I kept tripping over.
Well, that's the whole thing. It says between the 12th and 13th. So he's not the 13th necessarily.
Yeah.
Do you know what, right, I'm trying to say? Like, where does he fit in?
He isn't. Well, he is. And this is just my take on it. And this is really, and I'd be able to pursue this a lot farther. But if he is a byproduct, consider something like the idea of take a very Hindu approach of reincarnation. Okay, and the concept that every time, if you are living a pure and a stoic life, according to all of the codes and tenets that your religion, your faith is based upon, every one of your regenerations betters you as an entity. So if you are reaching your final regeneration, where you are, to take the analogy a little farther, you are at the point where you are just short of reaching nirvana, then you would need to, in some fashion, purge yourself of all of those impurities that may still remain. Well, what happens to that byproduct? You know, if it's something where, you know, it is at this high level of advanced being, as these Time Lords claim to be, then what's to say that it doesn't take on some sort of a physical form rather than just the idea of, oh, I'm shaking out the negatives. I'm shaking out the negatives, you know, and you're not prepping, yeah, for a scene here.
Well, we've already seen something like this with when Ten regenerated into the Metacrisis Doctor.
Correct.
You know what I mean? Like, there's like a split-off version. It's not a whole Time Lord, but it's, you know, it's a part of him.
Right.
Yeah.
You know, we've had a number of instances where the Doctor has run into obstacles created by his own need to walk a straight and narrow path, as he defines it. Whether or not that complies with what any of the positions of authority or organization around him, including the High Council, believe to be the correct path. Because of his moral code, which I'm sort of translating into what we saw in the Name of the Doctor, talking about the promise and referring to, you know, the one who broke the promise, is one of the things that I'm kind of tumbling around in my head, you know, going towards the 50th, in knowing that we've got to have some explanation of John Hurt's Doctor, or the one who is not worthy of the name, however you want to call it.
Yeah,
I don't know. It brings up some really interesting stuff.
And that's the biggest point for this theory, is the fact that, you know, this is a version of the Doctor which isn't, you know, which hasn't used the name. You know, as far as we know, that's the only time that he hasn't been called the Doctor, is when, you know, he became the Valyard. So, I mean, the fact that here's a Doctor that doesn't deserve the name, or hasn't, you know, he broke the promise, you know, really does give some credence to that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and one of the things I found really interesting rewatching some of these episodes is that, you know, the Master teams up with the Doctor to take the Valyard down, and he says to Glitz at one point, like, you know, the Doctor is my sworn enemy, but I'm okay against him. You know, I can take him down. The Valyard doesn't have any of his morals, doesn't have any of his compulsions for doing good or anything. I can't stand up against him.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and that just shows you how bad this guy is.
Yeah. But there's other times where the Master feels that he is in the prime position, because if he pits the Doctor and the Valyard against one another, he can just
sit back and watch them do each other in.
Yeah, take out whoever the victor is, you know, in a wounded state, and then he's got the best of everything. He has
taken
basically vanquished any semblance of the Doctor whatsoever, you know, good, bad, or indifferent. It wasn't a very good book, but there was one out there called Millennial Rights, which was published back in the, I don't want to say it was right around the Y2K time. It actually was focused around, it was a sixth Doctor jumping forward. So he was in 1999. He and his companion were going to celebrate. They were going to watch the Y2K celebration, the Millennial Celebration. And interesting, one little line thrown in there, Time Lord saying, you know, as a Time Lord, I need to correct you all in saying that the Millennium does not actually flip over until 2001, but he'll let that go. But we come to find out that as a result of this programmer who is afraid of the whole Y2K bug, he goes manipulates time such that an alternate universe is created. When the Doctor arrives, he's actually in an alternate 1999. And as a result of this slightly not quite the same as ours universe, the Doctor has magical powers. I mean, it really becomes a very kind of a wonky reality. Doctor finds that he has to not only utilize the Valyard, he actually has to become the Valyard for a period in order to correct the split in the alternate universe and get himself back on the proper fork.
Mm-hmm.
And begins to lose himself in that battle, you know, taking on all of the I'm going to use the term again, impurities that he had purged from himself in a future regeneration, which is the fascinating thing, starts affecting him to the point where he can't break out of it, and it's actually the TARDIS that has to pull him back. It's not a terribly good book. But the last couple chapters are kind of redeeming. So, you know, just because of the fact that that's when it gets genuinely hairy. The whole setup is kind of trite. But if you can get a hold of the Eight Doctors, or there's another one out there that involves the Seventh, called The Matrix, also known as The Dark Matrix. That's an interesting one. It involves the Valyard, never referred to as such. he takes on the form of Jack the Ripper because he has his own TARDIS. You know, why not? We'll give him his own. We'll give him a dark TARDIS. And instead of using the Matrix for his for tapping into all the memories and experiences of the Time Lords, he has the Dark Matrix, which feeds off of all of the crimes and horrible atrocities that any Time Lords have created. So the more things, more horrible things that occur at the hand of a Gallifreyan Time Lord, the more powerful the Dark Matrix is. So he puts the Dark Matrix in his TARDIS and then manifests himself as Jack the Ripper and goes out and starts murdering women because every human woman that he murders is more power for the Dark Matrix, and it just – the whole thing is just whacked. So good book if you can lay your hands on it. That one's out there on Amazon too, but you're going to pay a little bit more for it because it's a little harder to find. You might have to spring $13 or $14. Sorry.
All right, so – yeah, I mean, we really don't get a lot in the show itself about the Valyard aside from the fact that he knows Gallifreyan law. You know, we've got, 12 episodes where it's just courtroom drama, and then the final two are when he's revealed and when the Doctor actually has to go up against him. So we don't have that much conflict outside of the courtroom between the two. You know, we don't really have a full realization of what he is until the very, very end. And it just seems like, you know, there needs to be more.
Yeah. I think some of that fault lay in the way that the episodes were constructed. Some of the information that we were able to pull up said that there was a bit of a conflict in the writing process between some of our principal writers and our producers in terms of how they wanted to utilize him. Especially when it comes down to the reveal of what his intent was by the time you get to the fourth quarter of that four, I don't know, how do you want to describe it? The four serial arc, I guess. Difficult to describe. So taking the ultimate foe, which is the last four of these episodes that make up that Trial of the Time
Lord. Actually, it's the last two.
Sorry. Yeah. It is the denouement of this entire arc, and is where we start to find out what the Valyard's real intent was. As they were putting the script together, I guess in one of the first passes, they really wanted to go kind of dark with the whole thing. It really would have been in stark contrast to how all the preceding episodes were. They seem to be, you know, kind of adventures.
They seemed a little lighthearted. I mean, there were a couple parts in there, like the whole genocide thing where it was like, oh, that's sad, but nothing really dark.
Yeah. Right.
Well, weren't they also manipulated because they were, you know, via the Matrix, and it was what the Valyard wanted them to see, so like it wasn't quite what happened.
Right, and that was, you know, going along with obviously his thorough knowledge of the Gallifreyan or the Council law, he also was one of the few individuals who not only had the knowledge to do so, but had the balls to do so, to start manipulating evidence as it was presented. Didn't last very long. Because all it took was just kind of calling him out on a few things to be able to see the, you know, the unabridged versions of the historical records.
Right.
But just the same, you know, he was prepared to do some shady business to see these things through. I think they were just intending, or this earlier version of the script was intending to be able to show him as far more of a criminal mastermind, more on par with what the Master had been known to do. In previous episodes. So maybe they felt that was kind of a conflict. Well, we've done this sort of thing with the Master before. Now, why are we just going to sort of reintroduce the same tropes but just put a different villain behind it? But
I've crammed so much Valyard information in my head over the past couple of days. It's all starting to run together. Was it in the episode or was it somewhere else that I read it that the Valyard was actually brought forth by the Time Lords or by the High Council in order to prove the Doctor guilty and be able to execute him?
That I think was what the original script was attempting to do. I believe. I believe that it was something where it was a big conspiracy. Okay. And they were attempting to take him out. He was considered to be a loose cannon or an unpredictable element to represent them. So they created the Valyard based off the remnants in the Matrix of all of his wrongs, both the ones he had created at the time, obviously, as we're referring to about the sixth, but also looking forward in his timeline, because the Matrix does not recognize fixed points in time. It is all time.
Yeah.
So, which is kind of twisted. I would not want to be held on trial with evidence submitted of things that I haven't done yet.
Yeah.
But
I do have to say, though, that it was really interesting how the changeover of companions happened. Because we saw the exit of Perry and the introduction of Mel during this serial, and it was just really interesting how it happened, because normally there's a big sad send-off for the companion, and then there's a story about how the doctor meets the new companion and all this. We didn't get that with Mel. It was just like, oh no, I meet her at some point in the future, and then she's brought in later by the master, and the doctor just accepts her because clearly she's his companion now. So it was just really interesting how that played out.
And it's interesting that I think this is one of the first instances. There was another, and I can't remember it, long before River Song, where you've got a companion that is on a different timeline than what we're seeing through the Doctor. And it's implied that she's already met the Doctor. And it's funny, when you go ahead and you start seeing some of the later, like, Seventh Doctor episodes, there's a great one where they're beating the crap out of each other because they don't recognize each other. Mm-hmm. Seventh doesn't recognize Mel. Mel doesn't recognize Seventh, and they're basically, literally, like, Doctor picks her up and puts her in an airplane spin and whatnot, and they get in this big fight sequence because neither of them recognize each other in that form, because all of these things have happened before and will happen again and what have you. But yeah, the whole transition to Melanie is just kind of accepted. And I can't imagine what that was like from the viewer's perspective at the time after dealing with, enjoying Perry.
Yeah.
Yeah. Wasn't she great, kids? I love Mel. I always got a big kick out of her because she seemed saucy enough. She reminded me a lot of a sort of an underdeveloped Donna Noble. But maybe it was a ginger thing. I don't know.
Well, I do have to say, I felt like Perry finally got interesting there at the very end. And I was like, I could deal with this Perry, and now she's gone.
As soon as she learns how to contribute something,
yeah, to get rid of it. It's like, oh, no, wait, she's getting too big. Quick, boot her off, and let's get another little bimbo on here.
Damn, she grew a brain.
And I got to say that Bonnie Langford, the actress who plays Mel, if she has nothing else going for her, she knows how to scream.
Oh God!
Do not, if you get Trial of a Time Lord and you decide to watch through it, do not watch it with earphones. Trust me on this; it is painful.
Oh no! And turn off the 5.1 Dolby too, because it'll come at you from all angles.
Oh God! I was sitting in the I had jury duty, and I was figuring, hey, this is an appropriate time to watch Trial of a Time Lord. So I was sitting there watching it on my phone while waiting to get called. And, I've got my little earphones in so I don't disturb anyone else. And the first time that Melanie comes on and screams, I literally, shake and drop my phone on the floor. And I swear it probably looked like I was having a seizure just because it was painful. I mean, it hurt.
Yeah. Well, but that's good, though, because, it was a nice stark contrast.
Oh, yeah.
Perry was compliant. She kind of went along with things. She whined a bit. She didn't seem to understand a lot of things. She forced a lot of exposition out of the Sixth Doctor so that he had to, we never did go get a whole explanation about the Earth that wasn't quite Earth, that was on the planet and so forth. But she started getting to the point where she was starting to ask some of the good leading questions, and then they just kind of let it go. And it made her character weak. So I'm glad they put in Perry, who was really just kind of a, loud spitfire of a companion. So good to have around. But we do find in the Valyard's case that he is I wouldn't put him on the same pedestal as the Master. Definitely not of the same caliber. The Master is more singularly minded in terms of taking out the Doctor and what his intent is. The Valyard is doing so not just because of a protagonist and antagonist sort of nemesis combatants. This is more a matter of he's going after the personal gain of needing to prolong himself. So yeah. The Master goes after the regenerations from the Doctor at one point. When he finds that fails, he starts going after other means of extending his life, but now he's got a personal vendetta against the Doctor and is going to go after him by any means necessary. The Valyard, as we always saw, it was just a matter of he wanted to be able to rob the Doctor of his regenerations for personal gain. Plain and simple. Done.
Right. I mean, it seems like the Valyard is really an underdeveloped version of the Master. You know, it's like you've got the Master, who's a Time Lord, who is a brilliant person and evil, you know, mustache twirling kind of villain, and then you have the Valyard, who doesn't have all of the depth, but is supposed to be more. I guess it's the difference between being like criminally insane and being actually insane. You know, one is like, you know, the Master can function, he can plot, he can plan, and the Valyard is just out for chaos. You know, to a certain extent. I mean, the analogy breaks down after a point, but you know, it seems to be like they're very, very similar, but they tried to give the Valyard a different twist, and it just didn't take.
I think. I don't know if it was a matter of them attempting to make the Valyard a similar sort of foe, but being done so, at least initially, through more intellectual means, undermining, going through the system and beating him by the system. Mm-hmm. And when that fails, he just sort of resorts to the same sort of blunt force that a lot of his other nemesis start to fall into over time. And then when we start seeing the extended material and his attempts to sort of take the Doctor out in some of the novels and comics that follow, it really becomes more of that, you know, oh, I hired assassins. Oh, I'm, you know, I'm going after him by using Time Lord paraphernalia against him. You know, I'm going to
the gym socks of Rassilon. No.
Yeah, exactly. Yes. The jockstrap of Rassilon, as I like to refer to.
So,
still a nasty bit of business.
But I think, regarding the Valyard versus the Master, perhaps they're like, because I think with the Master, maybe we're not going to see his storyline for a while, but the Valyard is obviously going to come up again soon. So I almost wonder if, you know, when they made this Trial of a Time Lord, like his motivation as an actor was not necessarily like. I don't agree with you, Jay, saying that chaos is always after, like a Joker type of villain. I think maybe his intent was to teach the Doctor something because he is the Doctor. You know what I mean? Like the Master would not want to teach him something. The Master is the villain. They're opposed. They're diametric, you know? But when it's yourself, and I think that's why it didn't quite take. It doesn't look right because they're not traditional enemies in that sense. Like, so the storytelling breaks down.
The Master wants to take him out, whereas the Valyard almost get the impression he wants to assimilate him, because if he is born from the Doctor's failures, then maybe his point of revenge is to take the Doctor back in and destroy, in doing so, destroy all of the goody-goodiness that rejected him in the first place. So it's sort of a revenge theory in that point, whereas the Master is really just going after it. I would say more so from the force of nature or the desire for chaos and entropy.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I don't know. At least from what we've seen from the Master, you know.
Well, I mean, this trope is not something that is new. You know, I mean, taking your hero and saying, okay, let's give him an evil version to battle. You know, I mean, you know, some of the quick ones that come to mind, you know, you've got Spider-Man and Venom. You've got Link and then Dark Link. You know, even in Knight Rider, you had Kit and then you had Carr. You know, you take the exact same character and make them evil and try and pit them against each other. And it's, this happens all the time.
Bender and Flexo.
Yeah.
Or even Kit, Knight Rider's windshield wipers were evil.
The evil
it's another Futurama thing. Like, it wasn't talked about much.
All right.
No, but yeah, I can understand. I mean, you look, I threw in that little element to the notes. When Virgin Publications started to put out the New Who adventures, and there were a series of them that went out. I want to say there's probably about, easily 60 of these kind of quick little pulp fictions that they had done. They were told to avoid using the Valyard or anything that brought up about the trial of the sixth. In any of their extended material. And because they touched on all kinds of things. You see little tap-ins that had to do with almost all of the major incidents through second through seventh that they used in these new adventures that were basically just, they were considered to be part of canon, and they were very scrutinized by the BBC to make sure that they remained as canon. But they were told this was sort of like a, you know, the CIA blacked out couple of lines on the page, you know, do not, you know, use this material, because and the quote was what killed me. The guidelines the writers were handed actually said anything featuring the Valyard is out. He's a continuity nightmare and a rather dull villain, which I can understand the continuity nightmare, but I don't know if I'd call him a dull villain, because he was never given an opportunity, or at least to this point has not really been given an opportunity to show how he differs from the master comparison.
And I think that's what it is the fact that, you know, you didn't have a very strong showing for the Valyard so far. You know, there wasn't anything really strong to base it off of that was canon. You know, you had some books and things like that, but, you know, nothing really good to tie into. And anything they could really get their foot on, they're like, well, we could put the master in here and not have to worry about it.
More powerful.
Yeah. And everybody would know who he is and what he's doing. And we wouldn't have to worry about the, you know, all the continuity stuff and all the, you know, where did he come from? How does this tie in? So it was just, there wasn't a good place for him. You know, it's, had he been dynamically different from the master, I think we would have seen more from him possibly, or, you know, at least had a chance to flesh out his character some, but it did hit that point where it's like, well, we could do this with the Valyard, but we could do that with the Master and it would be so much easier and more powerful. Well, yeah, Let's do this with the Valyard. No, we can use the Master for that too. And it just, you really can't find a little niche for him outside of this role that he had.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's going to lead to an interesting question. Then, you know, if we're going to be, you know, whether it's the John Hurt mystery or whether it's just the idea of the fact that they chose to mention of all of the names that they threw about in the name of the Doctor, that was one that was a recognized, established character that they chose to use again. You know, they could have just used another nickname, you know, the Destroyer of Worlds, the, you know, what have you, and come up with any of those sort of monikers. But they called that one out by name. And then in the weeks ahead, and I was sort of sharing some of this through the through our Twitter stream and some other mention, BBC has actually gone back and revised their Doctor Who section of their site to contain a lot of backstory on the Valyard over the last 3 weeks or so, almost as if they were preparing for something. But they just added a ton of content that just wasn't there, because of the fact that it was mentioned in the series finale. And people started saying, just as Solated, who the frack is the Valyard? So there you go. Why would they waste the time and the bandwidth if they weren't, you know, if Moffat wasn't planning on using it again in some form? It may not even be in the, you know, in the 50th or in a couple of episodes to follow, but maybe he's just leaving the door open because it's an unexplored avenue that he can have fun with, because he can write it any way he wants. It's far enough back in the chronology of the show that he can update it just like he's done recently with a lot of these villains.
Well, or it could be the fact that he's like, okay, well, I'm going to put John Hurt in here as the Doctor, you know, and people are going to be clamoring to try and figure it out. If I mention the Valyard earlier on in the episode, they're going to grab onto that and they're going to run with it, and they're never going to see that he's actually blah.
Right.
You know, so it could be a red herring. You know, I mean, let's face it, Moffat is an evil rat bastard, and he is known to do this kind of thing.
Roll on.
So, yeah, it's I could see it being a red herring. I could also see it being hidden in plain sight kind of thing. You know, it could be that, you know, that John Hurt's doctor is the one who ultimately has to defeat the Valyard. You know, there's no way of knowing how he's going to tie this in. It's, you know, that's one thing I've figured out, is as soon as I have it figured out what Moffat is doing, I can instantly write that off as a possible scenario.
Mm.
Yeah, I mean, the guy is an evil genius.
Yeah.
Evil.
I'm very much looking forward to what he does with this.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, the simple fact is that no matter what happens, there's too much going around about the Valyard for them to ignore it. You know, it's going to get tied in somehow, even if it's just some backstory or a reference or something that doesn't happen until, you know, the series finale of Series 8. You know, it's going to come up sooner or later. I mean, that's something you can bet on wholeheartedly.
Yeah, I kind of feel the upshot, my take on the whole thing, and this is just kind of my conclusion, and I'll drop the mic and walk away from this at this point, was the Valyard has an opportunity to be an interesting character to return to. There, the way that his origin is created is far different than the Master. So while they may have similar intent in wanting to take out our fair hero, or the means they go about doing so, their backstories, and specifically the Valyards, as opposed to the Master being a Gallifreyan who just, you know, lost his way, or however you want to describe the Master's real form, the Valyard is this strange entity, because he is actually the manifestation of the Doctor that we hold so near and dear. And that's bizarre. And you want to know a little bit more about that. And I just feel like they haven't yet had the opportunity to do so. Maybe this is Stimo's opportunity to come up with a good, solid arc for a while, which we didn't have much of in the last series.
Yeah, no.
And he has been run up and down the pole on that one. This is his opportunity to say, all right, you want something to chew on? Here you go. And see what the audience thinks of it. And he's doing so by introducing it through this idea of the un-doctor first, or the not-doctor, or whatever, however you want to describe him. And maybe they'll back up into the Valyard, or maybe there'll be just another little mention in the 50th, and then which will just kind of get people's appetite all, you know, all wet for, what do they mean? The second time they've mentioned this weird character. And then we'll spend some of the time in Series 8 figuring out why he's back.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I think it's safe to say that we are going to see him again. It's just a matter of when and how.
Yeah. I'm ready.
Yeah, yeah. So hopefully that's kind of gotten you caught up on who the Valyard is or where he comes from, that kind of thing. So, you know, now you can go into it being slightly less clueless.
Right.
Yeah, and we highly recommend watching the whole Trial of a Time Lord arc, however many episodes that is. It's a great starting point and possibly easily available. I don't know.
not particularly, no. But we can suggest things for you. they may be making some corrections to that. I think with some of the things they've just recently done with the release of the special commemorative set for 4th. And things like that, they're starting to show signs of wanting to kind of open their death grip on some of the harder to acquire episodes. So, you know, if you're having a tough time seeking them out on DVD, if eBay is not really coming through for you on getting your copies on some of the old VHS or whatever it is that you're trying to look them up, Betamax or whatever, Laserdisc, you know, it may come around, because these are some great ones. And it's a really good opportunity to get a good understanding and appreciation for 6th, who I think gets a bum rap quite a bit.
Yeah. I've got to say, this was a stronger 6th Doctor serial. You know, it was one that was easier to be on his side and not just be irritated that he wasn't Tom Baker or David Tennant or something. You know, it's so many of the Sixth Doctor episodes, you're sitting there like, I don't like you. You're not the Doctor I want. Yeah,
and you dress like a clown.
Yeah. Yeah, and I mean, we're all familiar with that feeling. You know, the first Doctor that takes over after your Doctor always has that stigma, but it seems to stick to Colin Baker a little bit stronger. But this one, you can actually be like, okay, you're not bad. You know, I can get behind you on this. I can be on your side.
Yeah. It's funny. I was just at just like last week, we had the Kineticon, which is probably one of the larger cons that we have here in our modest little state. And I'll give a little shout out. I know they probably don't listen, but maybe one day one of them will. We had a strong representation from the Boston Whovians, which are about 700 strong. And there were about 20 or 30 of them in attendance at the con in Hartford. And one of their principals, one of their sort of their hosts or coordinators, is a guy who is known as the sort of Boston's Sixth. He has worked very hard in his cosplay for Sixth, sporting the blonde curly wig, rocking that multicolored suit, just didn't care.
He have a different cat pin for every time he shows up somewhere?
Well, I only saw him the one day, so he only had the one pin that day. I don't know if he changes them regularly. But
I call failure.
He did have both the blue and the red freaky ribbon ties. Because you'll notice that there were shots where you will see him both in the blue tassel-y frazzle tie and then times in the red. So, which did not have the same sort of theory as 11th in terms of whether he's in the past or the future. It didn't work out that way.
Yeah. All right. Well, that about does it for our Valyard section.
Yeah. So next week.
Well, we're not there yet. We've got to talk news first.
Oh,
calm yourself.
News. We all have Twitter.
All right. So, yeah, some of the stuff that's come out this week, the York maze, the corn maze or maze, however you want to say it.
When they made a maze of maize?
Yes. Yeah, it's amazing the way they made the Maze of Maze. They have done a salute to the Doctor Who. It has a giant Dalek on top and then kind of line drawings of the first and 11th Doctor as well as the years in there. It's really cool. I mean, you can go and look at the website and they've got a nice aerial view of it.
Yeah.
And it's just kind of interesting, a nice homage to Doctor Who.
And it's difficult to see the scale of it because the one PR picture that goes around is taken from this massive altitude, so you can take in the whole shot of the thing. It is huge.
Oh, yeah. Ginormous.
Yeah, but then when you get down to some of the – it's interesting. I love it when they start doing the faces and stuff and they start to work those things into it because it all looks like it was done with an Etch-A-Sketch because you have to leave an escape path in there somehow. So there's like little squiggle lines that come off the top of William Hartnell's head, Matt Smith's head, so that you can get back into the rest of the freaking maze and find your way out of the thing. So yeah, follow the little Etch-A-Sketch line. Just it's good to see that this is something that is being accepted or being embraced nationwide in all facets. I mean, it's not just a couple of signs on some buses and a couple of billboards around London and whatnot. This is everywhere.
Yeah, yeah.
We need something like this in the States.
Oh, absolutely.
But maybe when Law and Order finally gets to 50 years. It's freaking show dung.
Yeah. But see, the problem is that people would have to understand that there is vegetables in the U.S.
Yeah. Oh, right.
It's like, yeah.
Maybe if we plant some vegetables now by the 50th anniversary of Law and Order.
As sponsored by Monsanto.
Yeah.
Sorry, too soon?
A little bit, yeah. Yeah. All right, so.
Other stuff for the 50th. Tunes!
Nice.
I have to get a Homestar reference in there somewhere. So our beloved Murray Gold, my homie, my homeboy, my tweet peep, we've tweeted a few times, he and I, back and forth, you know, like this.
Hey, you want to pick up that name that you dropped there, buddy?
I'm sorry, did I step on that? I'm sorry, Murray Gold, whom I stepped on. has decided to share a little bit of the details on his Song for 50, which is the composition to go along with, or is going to be the sort of the recurrent theme that you'll hear throughout the anniversary episode. Interesting to see that he wanted it to be, in his words, sort of more knotty, more complicated. And he was going to go the more serious route with it, but then said, nah, the hell with it, it's the Doctor. And he decided to goof around with the thing anyway, because that's Burry for you. Yeah. It has been shared with a full orchestra and choir at the prom events, wasn't it?
Yes. Did they do that?
Uh-huh. Okay. Yeah, which we've been seeing and hearing quite a bit about, taking on the BBC proms at the Royal Albert Hall. Big deal. Lots of Who representation there. Big appearances from Matt and Jenna Louise. I'm sorry, Jenna, no longer Louise.
Yeah, Jenna Coleman. Yeah.
Jenna Coleman, Cougar Mellencamp, artist formerly known as.
And actually, both of them in character throughout the entire thing, like popping up every now and again as the Doctor and Clara.
Including appearances by Vostra and Strax.
Yes, and the Jadoon, and Susan, and also Peter Davison was in attendance as well. Yeah, so I mean, lots of people popping up.
Mm-hmm. Going back to the whole idea of the song, I believe there's a YouTube clip out there for it, which is not the song in its entirety, but you do get some of the sections that are very clear theme and variations on the I Am the Doctor theme that we've all come to recognize so well. So just go ahead, grab what you can out there. I think we'll, I don't know if they've given any information as to how soon we will get, I believe we're actually going to have access to the compositional score before the episode airs, before the anniversary episode airs, as part of sort of a celebration package. I think I had read somewhere that they were going to be putting that out there. But that remains to be seen. If I can find some information prior to posting, I'll add it to the link dump for this episode. So I have a little extra info. It's not like the Tolkien scores where people were listening to it and trying to figure out what scenes they were going to be seeing in the film by listening to the score.
Right.
I don't think it's going to work quite that well. But still, for fanboys and fangirls out there, we'll put our meaty, sweaty paws all over it as quickly as we can.
Oh, yeah. So, and also we've got, we don't talk about merchandise very much on here, but this one is actually really cool. On Amazon, you can find the Doctor Who Series 1-7 limited edition Blu-ray gift set. So this is a box set including all of series 1 all the way through 7. So everything from Chris Eccleston to the series that we just wrapped up. And it also includes the 11th Doctor's Sonic Screwdriver Programmable Remote.
Yes, to the lovely tune of $315 US.
Yeah. Yeah, that's
the remote,
that's
of which is about 110 of that.
Yeah, exactly. But yeah,
but if you hold out, because we've got San Diego Comic-Con going on right now, and ThinkGeek's booth has, for any of you out in the San Diego area who are planning to go to con, go find their booths, because it's actually two, I believe, on the vendor floor, and one of them has a demonstration copy of the forthcoming 10th Doctor programmable TV remote, which will not be available until next year.
Mm-hmm.
But you can find one to play with. Toy!
I'm so jealous of everyone at the con right now.
Yeah. Much.
Yeah.
But, yeah, so gift sets out there. Go ahead and put on your wish list. Maybe someone will
donate a couple dollars to it.
Yeah. Around. Do a Kickstarter campaign. I'll stop crying if you buy me this gift set kind of thing.
Yeah.
Or they'll get it for you for Chris McQuinugamus or something. Hanukkah Nugamus.
Yeah. Yeah. So, but yeah, that about does it for the news. Not a lot going on right now, but hopefully with San Diego Comic-Con going on right now, or very soon, I forget when, that we should get some news coming up soon.
Yes, yes. And we'll have Dragon Con coming up next month, and I'm sure because there are going to be a couple of Whovian representations there, including, I believe, Colin Baker and Peter Davison, if not more. Finally, I'm going to get an opportunity to meet Peter Davison. Very psyched about this. Yeah, we'll gather all the information we can. Because at that point, we should be drawing closer to Moffat's promise that we would know the identity of our 12th before the 50th anniversary airs. He said, as soon as I know, you'll know. Okay. Okay. I got a bridge for you in Wales I'd love to sell you to.
And here's how much I believe anything Moffat says.
Yes, exactly.
My fingers are very close together, by the way.
I can hear the crickets. But next week, you don't have to wait for cool crap. You don't have to wait. You can just join us next week, because next week we will be discussing Brigadier, Sir, Alistair, Gordon, Lethbridge, Stuart, Big, man with the stash.
So Kier's been waiting on this episode for months. He's been badgering us constantly. Can we do a Brig episode now? How about now? Can we do a Brig? Can we talk about the Brig?
And it was great because when I was at Con last weekend, we were sitting in on a very, very interesting panel discussion about companions past and present. They had some brilliant insight between these two guys, and I will give them credit as soon as I can remember what the hell their names were. It was Uncle Yo and somebody else. So Uncle Yo, if you're out there and you're listening, kudos on a phenomenal panel. But they had a moment of silence where they had to put their fists to their mouths and stifle it back when they had to discuss the Brig, because he was just described as, you've got companions that come and go, you've got the ultimate companion in the form of the TARDIS, but if you want to discuss the Doctor's friend, that's the Brig.
Oh yeah, yeah.
And we're gonna take that apart next week. I can't wait.
Yep. So, yeah, definitely come back then, and if you don't know anything about the Brig, we'll kind of be doing the same thing we did this week, and just trying to learn you.
I know even less about the Brig than I know about the Valiard, though, so.
I will get you a reference list of episodes you need to see, because the Brig is one of the few characters that has seen the Doctor over and over and over in so many incarnations that in one instance, he actually meets the Doctor for the first time in that form and knows he's the Doctor before the Doctor even opens his mouth. He just sees his behavior. All right. And he's got him. He knows him that well. Perfect. Nice. Perfect.
All right. Well, if you guys have any feedback on this episode, if you have any further questions about the Valiard or, stuff that you know that we didn't mention, anything like that, feel free to hit us up. Give us your feedback. Hit us on Twitter at Gallifrey Radio. We're on Facebook. Leave iTunes comments. We've been getting some more of those and we love those. Please. Yes, yes. You can send us an email at feedback@gallifreypublicradio.com. Go over to the website, gallifreypublicradio.com. Leave comments on the posts there. Get some conversations going over there.
Yeah, and not just reactions to what we've been discussing about the Valiard. If you've got some information you want to share for next week about the Brig, too, do so well in advance so that we can have a chance to chat with you about it, and you might be able to open our eyes to some things we weren't even prepared to discuss.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Well, this has been episode 45 of Gallifrey Public Radio. Until next week, this is Jay saying, I should have stayed here. The oldest civilization, decadent, degenerate, and rotten to the core. 10 million years of absolute power. That's what it takes to be really corrupt.
This is Melissa saying that I demand to be referred to as Sagacity from now on.
Nice. And this is Kira saying, if I started questioning the wisdom of my actions, I would never have left Gallifrey.
See you guys next week.
Bye.
Thanks for joining us for another episode of Gallifrey Public Radio. Join us each week for new episodes. Have something you need to say, something we got wrong, or something you just need to weigh in on? Send us an email at feedback@gallifreypublicradio.com. You can also find us on Twitter @GallifreyRadio, on Stitcher Smart Radio under Gallifrey Public Radio. Find us on iTunes, where you can leave us comments and reviews. You can also head over to our homepage at GallifreyPublicRadio.com, where you can leave comments on each episode and get into discussions on the things that we bring up. You can also keep up to date on all the latest news and what's going on in the community. Music by Beyond the Epilogue and Retcon Addict.
Gallifrey Public Radio is copyright 2013.
Keep messing that up. Jeez. Until
44
next
or 45, Jay? No,
it's 45. It's 45.
How come it said 44 at the top of the thing? Now I got to redo the intro.
No, it's all right. I was going to overdub it.
This is 45.
Radio edit.
All right. Can I finish the outro now? Can I do that now?